strong words from the U.S. overnight, reaction to the largest unauthorized protest in years, a rare sight in Russia. People took to the streets in nearly 100 cities across the country. More than 1,000 people were detained. Now, Alexei Navalny, the opposition leader and anti-corruption activist, called for these protests. At least one American journalist was detained. The State Department released a statement saying the United States strongly condemns the detention of hundreds of peaceful protesters, adding it is an affront to core democratic values, and the U.S. is troubled to hear of the arrest of Alexei Navalny.
It's only a month until the first round of France's presidential election, but nearly half of voters still aren't sure who to back. An opinion poll by Adoxa for France Info Radio finding 43% are hesitating between several candidates, reflecting an unprecedented uncertainty in French electoral history and underlining a volatile campaign.
A new turn in the relentless pursuit of impeached President Park Geun-hye in South Korea. Prosecutors on Monday saying they will seek an arrest warrant that will land her in a prison cell for up to 20 days, while under investigation for allegedly taking bribes in return for political favors. Prosecutors can continue their probe while the former president is in a prison cell. They need to file charges against her inside the 20-day window.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It is March 27th, 2017, 5:11 in the morning. Glad to have you along for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day, another business week underway as well. Lots to talk about today on the show. Coming up a little bit later on, we'll have a conversation about the future of Sears. Lots of questions about whether this iconic brand, this iconic department store will continue into the rest of this year after announcing last week that they were having big troubles and they may not be able to stay in business. We'll also talk a little bit about climate change and how it impacts kids, especially with the trip to the Notabart Museum, Nature Museum's new exhibit, all coming up right after we check the WGN Associated Bank market desk this morning. Could be a rough day for stocks. So right now, Dow futures are off 141 points, and NASDAQ and S&P futures are down as well. NASDAQ futures off about 44, S&P futures off about 20. Crude oil is trading down about 1% today. European stocks are all lower, and the same story in Asia, all red arrows. Asian stocks are going to end almost 1.5% lower as we move toward the close this morning. The Nikkei leading the way off nearly 300 points. The Asian Dow, Hang Seng also losing almost 0.5% each. What's happening? Well, investors are concerned about what happened on Friday, the failure of the health care law in Washington. The dollar and share prices tumbled as investors worried now that President Trump will not be able to get through some other key campaign promises, specifically cutting taxes and spending and doing an infrastructure plan. Trump's failure to rally enough support from his own Republican Party to repeal and replace Obamacare has spurred a rush to safe haven assets like gold. Gold prices climbed more than 1% to one-month high of nearly $1,259 an ounce. We will, of course, continue to monitor that throughout the morning as we watch your money here on 720 WGN. On Friday, the stock market finished down just a few points, not a bad finish, but it was still a losing day for Wall Street. This morning, again, we're looking for a weak open as we look at Wall Street, 141 points to the lower. In our spotlight this morning, we're going to talk a little bit about climate change. The Peggy Notabart Nature Museum here in Chicago started a new exhibit called Our House, Rethinking Home in a Changing Climate. Looks at how families can adjust to man-made environments and harmonize more with the natural environment. It opened on the 25th, and it'll run through the year. Kristen Pratt is Director of Sustainability in the Chicago Academy of Sciences and is Peggy Notabart Nature Museum overseeing this exhibit that, again, opened called Climate, Our House, Rethinking Home in a Changing Climate. And Kristen is with us this morning. Good morning, Kristen. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you for inviting me to actually see the preview of the show so that I know what we're talking about today. It was really nice to come and get a firsthand tour of the place yesterday.
Yeah, it was fun to walk you around the exhibit.
So tell us about it. This is climate. It's the ongoing climate change series of exhibitions, but what's the new part of it?
That's right. So this exhibit is focused not just on the fact that climate change is a thing, and here's how climate is different from weather, which is what we featured in our last exhibit. This exhibit focuses on the climate impacts that we're already experiencing and what we expect to see moving forward, and how with this knowledge we really should be acting, and how we can prepare to adapt to the changes that we're seeing and are likely to continue to see.
And the exhibit is really kind of cool because it gives sort of a hands-on feel of, here is my life, here's my neighborhood, here's my home. Tell us about how you've done that.
Yeah, so when you first walk into the exhibit, you actually walk into a house. And the idea is to first connect you with how your home impacts the environment. And so we talk a little bit about greenhouse gas emissions. We talk about how our homes have impacted the landscape over time. And then after you think a little bit about how our homes have impacted the environment over the past several centuries, we then explore the rest of the exhibit, where we say, okay, and so the environment also is impacting our homes. And so when we think about coastal properties, especially out on the East Coast, what should we be concerned about with hurricanes and rising tides, and what technologies exist that can help us build homes that are going to be able to withstand what they're going to face? And then we take a similar approach for issues like heat and drought, for extreme variability in seasons, like what we see here in Chicago with heat waves and then polar vortices. So it's really meant to help people think about, this is what the weather would actually look like. This is what we should be expecting, and we can prepare. This is what we can do to our homes. Here are tiny model homes. Here's technology that is already existent that we can implement.
And the cool thing is that some of those weather things you talked about, we experience here in Chicago, the polar vortex, the snow, the heat. But even for me, it was cool to see what it's like to be on the coast and live, because it's something we don't get to see here.
That's right. And so I think, as the Nature Museum, we really like to focus on our regional ecosystems and issues that face people here in the Midwest. But it's also important when we think about climate change to think about the impacts that will be seen across the country and around the world. And so I think this exhibit gives that opportunity to zoom out a little more, as you said.
So who's the target audience for this? What ages?
So we designed the exhibit for our audiences that visit the Nature Museum, which is everyone from 2 to 90, right? the whole spectrum. And so we have created this exhibit so that there are plenty of youth-friendly activities within it, things to climb on, things to explore, things to observe, things to play with, but also that as your children are having a meaningful experience in the exhibit and becoming exposed to some of these weather concepts, you have an opportunity to dig a little deeper and learn some content yourself as the adult.
There are a couple of different ways that you do that in the exhibit. A couple that as a big kid, I was having fun with. The building blocks on the scale were kind of cool too. Explain that.
Sure. So we introduce in that home area that I was describing the concept that many aspects of our buildings have an impact on the environment. Things like electricity, the materials that we choose to use, how we transport things to and from our homes, including ourselves. And so we ask some of the children who visit the exhibit to consider how they would build a house and which elements they would use. And they use these wooden blocks that are representative of different approaches to building your home, and try to make the house as light as possible. And so you can even have a competition between two people on these scales to see who can build the more environmentally friendly home.
Another cool part of the exhibit, I don't want to give all of it away because I think you have to go and see it, but there are video screens in each one of the areas where you sort of like do a quiz, and one you actually take things away and put it in. So it's very interactive.
Yeah, I like that you describe it as a quiz, because you're right. We kind of give people the opportunity to learn the content, and then through the touchscreen interactives, we give folks a chance to apply what they've learned. And so once you learn about things like oyster walls and sea walls and dunes and how they can help deal with the impacts of hurricanes or rising tides, we then say, okay, so how would you build your house to withstand this kind of weather? And it's, as you said, an opportunity to add and subtract different components and see if you can make a home that would weather the storm.
This is a complex issue. How is it explained to young people and little kids, 5 years old, 10 years old? What are their ranges of knowledge on this?
Yeah, Yeah, so we think it's really important to take an age-appropriate approach to these types of heavy issues and a lot of environmental issues. And so our general rule of thumb is that anyone under the age of 7, what we're really asking them to do is learn about the world around them and explore and see the world around them. And so we're not talking about climate change and extreme precipitation events with 3-year-olds. Instead, we're talking more about, hey, what happens when it rains? Do you notice puddles? Where do you think the rain goes? And have a chance for those types of explorations. Then as children get a little bit older and start to learn about cause and effect in our relationship with the environment, that's when you can start focusing more on skill building. And so that's where, again, with this concept of extreme precipitation, we might start talking to them about, hey, so here are plants that have really deep roots, and that helps water get into the soil so that it doesn't cause flooding the street. And so if you plant some plants with deep roots, that might actually really help you and the environment. That might be a good thing. And then as children get even older, we say over the age of 11 generally is when we can start talking about some of the harder concepts or things that can sometimes be scarier. And I think what's really important then is to be honest about the facts and what's happening, but to really focus on what action can be taken and to keep children from feeling defeated and disempowered. And so sometimes that might be emotional for children, and we think it's important to validate that and say, you know, I see that you're concerned and I'm so glad that you care. And so here's what we can do.
Do you see light bulbs going off in their little heads? Because I mentioned to you during the tour that one of my nieces, 6 years old, is concerned about dolphins. And so we've decided not to give cans with the little plastic things on them anymore. That's her way of acting. But that's her light bulb going off. Do you see the light bulbs going off in these little kids?
Oh, for sure. And I think the way that we see it that makes us happiest is when they're excited to take action, when they're excited to go home and, as I said, you know, plant a shade tree or plant plants with deep roots, or to look at, around their home and see how they can help mom and dad figure out where the gaps are for their weatherization in their home, how they might do a better job of air sealing, insulating.
Right.
Little kids get
right,
that.
Kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the other thing, part of it too, is there's a big section there on critters. I love that you call them critters, but how animals sort of play into all of this, the good ones and the bad ones.
Right. So we know that with climate change, there are impacts on plant hardiness zones that change where plants are able to survive, and that impacts habitat and resources for critters, as I often say, for wildlife. And so the exhibit talks a little bit about how that might change the types of animals that you see outside of your home, and how that might change your relationship with pests, and how you can deal with that in a responsible way, and how you can even continue to foster this healthy habitat for animals in your backyard.
So this is one of, and the other thing you explained to me too, this is this exhibit that's opening now, House, Rethinking Home and Changing Climate. It's one of several different components of an overall climate exhibit.
That's right. So our first exhibit was called Weather to Climate, and it focused on the difference between weather and climate. There's often a misconception, and we use those terms interchangeably. And climate is really focusing on weather patterns for at least 3 decades. So what you see happening outside right now is weather. What happens over these long periods of time is climate. And so they're related concepts, but different. And so we talked in that first exhibit about those issues. Now this exhibit is, okay, so we understand what climate is, and we know that our weather patterns are changing, and that we can expect more extreme precipitation events here in the Midwest. We can expect more heat waves and drought. We can expect to be facing these new types of challenges. And so how do we respond? So now that we know this is going to be happening, what should we be doing, not just with our buildings, but the exhibit also talks to some extent about, from an urban planning perspective, how can we be making policy or thinking about where people live, thinking about the green space that we protect as a city in order to prepare for these changes.
And that's sort of an important role of the museum. It's so nice to have that museum right in the center of an urban area. What is the impact you've seen of it since the Notab Art Museum's been there?
So I think what we try to offer is an urban gateway to nature and science. So if you've never visited the Nature Museum, when you pull up, we actually have nature trails that are considered an exhibit outside of our museum that feature little vignettes of different types of ecosystems that you might have seen in the region. And so as people come to the Nature Museum, we hope that they are not seeing nature as something that is over there, but something that is right here in your own backyard that you experience every day. And so we're really fostering that deeper connection. That's the goal, and I think we've accomplished it.
Yeah, I know from where I walked, there was a trail that went from the parking lot up to the opening of the museum, which is
kinda cool.
There's
a beautiful pond at the back of the museum. We have migratory birds passing through. There's actually a weekly birding group that meets at the museum. So it's really an opportunity for people to come to appreciate more of the nature in their everyday lives right here in Chicago.
Well, I know I asked you some questions about the education part of this with young people and kids, but this is for all ages, as you mentioned earlier. If people are listening and they want to get involved and learn more and raise awareness or be educated, how can they do that?
Yeah, we have some really exciting programming coming up in the next few months in conjunction with the exhibit and also just with the museum's mission in general. Coming up on April 6th, we'll be hosting a forum in partnership with the Chicago Metropolitan Agency for Planning, where we'll have an in-depth conversation with experts in the field to think more about how Chicago and how the region as a whole should be responding with climate change in mind. And so we hope that people will join us for that. It's from 3 to 4:30 on April 6th. We also have a wonderful program that's been around for about 10 years now called the Chicago Conservation Corps, where we train Chicago residents who are interested in learning about sustainability issues in Chicago. And they go through 8 classes with us. It's about 20 hours of training where they meet dozens of partners from nonprofit organizations and government agencies. And at the end of that training, the Nature Museum actually provides participants with funding to lead service projects in their own communities that are tailored to the needs that people identify. And we'll have ongoing drop-by programs within the exhibit so that people can learn more kind of one-on-one with our volunteers and staff. We'll also have workshop offerings about things like our spring home and garden series. We'll have a plants for pollinators plant sale. So basically any week you come by, there's going to be something different happening that helps us look at this issue of climate resiliency in a different way.
And I know you're overseeing this exhibit, but you can make a day of it at the museum. There are other things there to see as well. The butterflies is a big one, right?
Yeah, the Judy Eistock Butterfly Haven has over 1,000 free flight butterflies hanging out in a tropical greenhouse. It's pretty cool to see. We also have our Riverworks area for young kids to splash around and play. And as I mentioned, those really great outdoor nature trails. So definitely come by.
Well, Kristen, it's good meeting you again. Thanks for the tour. And this exhibit will be run through when?
Labor Day.
Good to have you here on The Opening Bell.
Thanks so much.
Kristen Pratt is Director of Sustainability at the Chicago Academy of Sciences. Also, Peggy Nota, Barton Nature Museum, where the new exhibit, Our House, Rethinking Home in a Changing Climate, is now open again through Labor Day. We've posted it on our Twitter. We'll also put on The Opening Bell page on WGNradio.com as we do our podcast this morning. A video will take you on a little tour of the exhibit. You can also hear more of our conversation after the bell with Kristen Pratt here on The Opening Bell.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. 5:41 here on the Monday edition of The Opening Bell. Sears has warned that it might not be able to stay open and keep operating after a troubled last year, actually a troubled few years. Investors shocked last week when the company who operates Sears and Kmart stores filed with the Securities and Exchange Commission and said it had substantial doubt about its ability to stay in business unless it can borrow more and tap cash from assets. Immediately, stock plunged almost 13%, and there are now suppliers of Sears questioning whether or not they're even going to be delivering to the company. Joining us this morning is Noel Hebert, a Bloomberg Intelligence analyst. Noel, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Hey, morning to you, Steve.
This is, for us here in the Chicago area, really for a lot of people across the country, one of those iconic brands and department stores. What's going on with Sears, and is there a possibility we'll see this company cease to exist soon?
Well, I guess to the first part of the question, there is an awful lot going on with Sears, as you alluded to, for the last few years there has been. in terms of whether they're not going to be around soon, I don't think that's the immediate risk, because obviously, you know, you've got restructuring or those sorts of things that kind of happen first. But I think, you know, one of the big things that's happening for them, obviously, is they're in a mall, and malls are very problematic for everybody right now. And then you compound that by the fact that Sears probably hasn't invested in their store base in over a decade, pretty much since Eddie took over and was operating it more to sort of produce cash versus reinvesting in the store itself, which is a very difficult way to run a retailer.
Noel, I'm going to hit a couple of things that you talked about just then. First, the restructuring. Does that mean bankruptcy first?
Yeah, so, you know, if you think about, so the answer there is yes. So, I mean, typically what happens for a lot of retailers is they'll restructure, they'll figure out what a sustainable store base may look like. So if you look at Sears right now, they exited the year with a little over 1,400 stores, and maybe they look at their portfolio and say, well, maybe this can operate as an 800-store retailer. And so they would go through the bankruptcy process to close whatever the difference is. But if you also look at Eddie Lampert and his interest, you know, so Sears spun out Seritage, which is a real estate company, a little over a year ago, and that owns a lot of the old real estate of Sears, but they are dependent upon Sears still paying leases into them. So Eddie has sort of an interest in keeping Sears afloat so that he can kind of make sure all these other pieces kind of maintain their value.
The other part of that is, you mentioned this is Sears. In a lot of places, it's an anchor store for the malls. So if Sears goes, this could really create a ripple effect in that retail environment, can't it?
Sure can. So it depends on the mall and the region, right? So there's going to be some mall operators that'll be probably pretty happy to see Sears go because they're operating to a different consumer. But the reality is you also have others that operate malls where you have occupancy clauses within those leases where a bunch of other retailers, if Sears goes and a JCPenney goes, then a bunch of all the other retailers can get out of their leases at no cost. That could really kind of have a cascading effect.
Is it something that can be saved? Can Sears be saved? What would it take to do that?
I think it takes Eddie's continued willingness to open up his checkbook, I guess, is probably the big part of it. But, you know, I think it is an iconic brand. I think they got to figure out who their market is. But I think the way they've been running it, which is to say not investing back in the business, I don't think you can run a retailer that way long term. They're thinking of it more as the stores being an extension of what they call their Shop Your Way, which is sort of this online plus membership plus stores plus whatever. And I think they're just way too late in the game to try and compete with an Amazon or some of those guys. So they've got to sort of accept that they're a retailer, which means they'll have to be willing to reinvest in the stores. Whether they're willing to do that would be sort of a departure from the strategy we've seen for the last decade, but not impossible.
Noel, I know there are some analysts who are, if you read various stories on Sears, many will blame management. They'll blame Mr. Lampert for this problem. Is he to blame here, or are there lots of factors?
Well, I mean, I don't think he's helped, but I think we've also seen it. I mean, they're certainly not alone, right? So, I mean, you've got Macy's that's, you know, closing 100 stores. You've got JCPenney closing 130 stores. You have a bunch of apparel guys that are in dire straits. So it's not, I mean, there's a retail climate out there that's really bad for a traditional retailer. But the fact that he's elected to sort of not spend on these stores, whether it's capital expenditures to make the stores look prettier or even just on the advertising side, to say, hey, Sears is open for business, come buy from us, I think it's definitely not helped the problem.
And what about Kmart in all of this? I know Sears has been selling off some of its brands. Is Kmart going to survive in this, or will it go down with the ship?
Well, that's going to be an interesting one, because Kmart's kind of, it has a couple of business lines. So it was like sort of like the original discounter, right, before it lost its market position to Walmart and the likes. And they've got actually some interesting business lines. They do grocery, they do pharmacy, some of these things that actually keep people coming in on a regular basis. The challenge there, similar to Sears, is they haven't done it well. And then you also have the issue that they tend to be in lower kind of desirability in terms of real estate and that sort of thing. So I think, you know, for Sears and Kmart, you can see them both surviving over the intermediate term in some shape or form on a much smaller basis. But I think Kmart is a model that over the intermediate to longer term, you really have to justify, you know, what is it doing?
We talked about this being an iconic brand. It's hard to imagine the landscape not having Sears in it in some way or another. Talk to us a little bit about that. I mean, we've over the years seen iconic brands go away, but this one is kind of the big one, isn't it?
Well, it's, you know, they are the modern, they reinvented retail, right? So, you know, I think it doesn't go away altogether, right? Because I think a lot of these guys end up having a way to sort of reinvent themselves. You know, and certainly to your point, this isn't like Radio Shack going out of business, right? But even in Radio Shack, you had Standard General go out and buy the IP and sort of try and reinvent that business a little bit. Didn't work out. They just filed again. But, you know, somebody will want the IP here, and it'll exist in some shape or form. It's just not as a 1,400-store retailer.
Yeah, and that's the other part of this. Aside from just the inner workings of Sears and the retail aspects of all, we're talking about people and places that have, maybe this is their only department store. We're talking about, what, 140,000 employees? That's a big chunk of workers out of the economy.
Yeah, it sure is. I mean, they definitely, you know, they've been a big employer for many years. I mean, but you go back, I guess, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, and this is also including like the Sears Canada, and you had 3,500 stores. So they've been closing pretty rapidly. The landscape hasn't missed them a lot. But to your point, I think there are definitely regions, certainly through the Midwest, where we've had a lot of exits from sort of Macy's and those kinds of folks, where they are the go-to spot. And it's just a function of, can they avoid being disintermediated by online as online kind of grows more and more prolific?
So, Noel, what would be the next next mark in the timeline here? What do you think is going to happen next?
Well, I think a lot of people are looking at June, July of this year as sort of a litmus test. They've got a little bit of debt coming due. It's $500 million. Well, I say a little. It's pretty substantial when you're using as much cash as Sears is right now. So people are looking at that June, July time frame. The note that's out there is partly owned by Eddie Lampert and ESL, but it's also partly owned by another party called Cascade. So whether they can refinance that, that's going to be a big test. And you also just have people are looking at it, not to get over jargony into like the bankruptcy stuff, but when they divested Seritage a little while ago, people sort of look at those sort of asset transfers and say, we want those to kind of age 18, 24 months before we do anything to avoid fraudulent conveyance, which is a way in bankruptcy to grab assets back. So you also, that June, July timeframe also represents sort of the aging out of Seritage. So you get some people that are really looking at that horizon. But realistically, if Eddie kind of just opens his checkbook one more time, then they should be able to get into 18. What they can do in 18, very challenging because they've got much more debt coming due.
Noel, thanks for your insight and expertise on this, and I guess we'll stay tuned to see what happens next.
Thanks, Steve.
All right, Noel Hebert is with Bloomberg Intelligence. He's an analyst there on the future of Sears.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Dow futures looking like a very weak open on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures now off 140 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures lower as well. Gold and silver are trading up. Red arrows all over the market desk this morning in Asia and in Europe. A couple of other stories we're watching for you this morning. A survey of economists finds that U.S. economic growth is expected to accelerate this year and next, remaining modest, even if President Trump's promised tax cuts and infrastructure spending are implemented. The survey by the National Association for Business Economics out today predicts the economy will grow at a solid 2.3% rate this year, 2.5% rate in 2018. The Associated Press has determined that North Carolina's law limiting LGBT protections will cost the state more than $3.7 billion in lost business over a dozen years. That's despite Republican assurance that the bathroom bill isn't hurting the economy. The tally includes Commerce Department projections for several large companies that backed out of projects because of the law, as well as estimates for dozens of canceled sporting events, concerts, and conventions. Now on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Monday, it's March 27th. There are no major economic reports scheduled today. However, tomorrow, the Conference Board will issue its Consumer Confidence Index for March. Standard & Poor's will release the S&P Case-Shiller Index home prices for January. On Wednesday, more housing market news. The National Association of Realtors will release its pending home sales index for February. Also today, just one other happy note, funny note on the calendar, the World Clown Association International Convention begins in Thailand, including awards for best clown in the world. That's coming today.